It's such a beautiful day. Now, my job is to take on challenging questions from the pulpit. Questions like, how can we love the unlovable? But maybe I don't need to take the hardest example of such a question on a day like this one. So let me try to persuade you simply to love our annual meeting. Now, I'm not doing this to help the board be confident that we will have a quorum of members, as our bylaws require for the meeting to be held. I'm doing it because finding something to love about people, situations, and things that we don't love instinctively is an important spiritual practice. The annual meeting seems like a kind of a non-threatening exercise in such non-instinctual love. It's not like I'm going all Jesus on you and asking you to love your enemies. So, some of you might not even see this as a challenge at all, loving what we are going to do today after grabbing a little bit of refreshment. In my many decades as a Unitarian Universalist congregant, I can recall years when I looked forward to sitting among my people and hearing about the health of our congregation and sharing my thoughts about how we were doing living out our values in our budget and other business that came before the meeting. But I have to be honest, there were other years when staying for the annual meeting and paying attention felt more like a responsibility. There have been annual meetings I skipped, either because I felt I had nothing to contribute because I was in the process of moving or something like that, or simply because I had other important calls on my time that day. Whatever your reasons for staying or leaving today, I have to imagine on this perfect early summer morning, there's a question you've been posed, and that is, why did I come here to begin with? And I'm noting which ones of you are laughing the hardest at that. I'm here to say that I'm pretty sure that all pathways to the answer to that lead to love. Now, there was no question about it for our Universalist forebears. Their faith told them that you come to church every Sunday, to praise a God whose love was mighty, so powerful, in fact, that he gathered every human into a heavenly place of peace, beauty, and belonging. Every last person, no matter how far they had strayed from kindness and compassion in their lifetimes, no matter how miserably or inexplicably they had suffered. Now, few of us today know that experience of divine love. The majority of modern UUs reject any idea of any sort of life after death. So the question of a God, all-powerful God, gathering us into that kind of heaven isn't how we see the world. We still come here for love, though. We still think it's a brilliant idea to gather in the name of love. Some of us try to explain it to friends and neighbors, and some don't. Some cannot even put the impulse into words. In my case, I've had to think about it. I do have some words. The love I come for is grounded in faith that through the evolution of intelligent life out of star matter, we find ourselves at a sacred moment in history and space. We live in a thrilling time when, through us and perhaps other advanced forms of life, love with a capital L is emerging as a shaper of evolution. That's the big picture, but we experience it one by one. I believe each one of us can relate to the prayer embodied in Raymond Carver's poem called Late Fragment. Carver died of cancer at the age of 50. It was just a few short years after he had finally managed to break away from a series of brutal addictions that had been ruining his life, and he'd found happiness in a marriage to fellow poet Tess Gallagher. Late Fragment. And did you get what you wanted from this life, even so? I did. And what did you want? To call myself beloved, to feel myself beloved on the earth. This blessing of feeling beloved can sometimes appear in our lives through no great effort on our part. In fact, sometimes it lands on us despite behavior that seems calculated to drive love away. Other times, we might go through our lives feeling just a little bit liked by a few people, but we discover that we are actually treated with a deep love by many people when a crisis arrives. In all these cases, we experience what old-time religion calls grace, that unearned sense of love. Grace makes it a lot easier to believe in a traditional God at work in the universe controlling our lives. And the Unitarian quarrel with fundamentalism has always been that fundamentalists seek to convince us that we are unworthy of love as a way of proving that a God of grace and mercy must exist. But the experience, or even just the possibility of grace, is no excuse for denying the inherent worth and dignity of each of us, denying the inherent lovability of each of us. Nor does it justify laziness, living only for personal pleasures. Oh, grace will come along and bail me out. We must be homemakers for love in our lives and the lives of others. We must be organizers, funders, allies. As was said at a recent installation of a minister I went to, co-conspirators with love. We must build for love, as we did in our capital campaign. Our annual CVUUS business and gratitude meeting is that kind of work. It has an agenda, just like any other meeting, but it is love in action. To paraphrase Reverend Wolfe's words about why people join a UU congregation, time here is well spent in worship and work that stands against superstition and fear. It's well spent seeking out how to know what is best in humanity, opening each other to new understandings of human identity and all the different ways that we can identify ourselves in the world, in teaching children that religion is for joy and gratitude and love. It's well spent naming the holy rather than obsessing over what society calls sin, in being more concerned with human beings than dogma. Now, I came to see that participating in the life of this Unitarian Universalist congregation and the annual meeting is a brilliant idea thanks to a book called This Idea is Brilliant, Lost, Overlooked, and Underappreciated Scientific Concepts Everyone Should Know. I married into this book. Let me explain. By that I mean, when you travel with a book lover, you end up in bookstores you could easily have walked past if you were on your own. And you end up acquiring books while you're waiting for your book lover to finish their browsing. Has anybody here ever had that experience? So that's how all these brilliant scientific ideas came into my life. About a year ago, Michelle led us into a bookstore in Washington, D.C. And after chatting for a while downstairs with a clerk and a college friend of hers, whom I happened to overhear talking about Middlebury, I found myself in front of a shelf with paperback books saying, edited by John Brockman, on their spines. Now, I had interviewed Brockman during my days as a New York Times technology reporter. He had come to my attention as the publisher of a website called Edge.org. Edge is the online successor to an informal network of artists, scientists, technology entrepreneurs, and philosophers that called itself the Reality Club. Now, that ambiguous name could be interpreted as a hopeful statement, or it could be regarded as condescending to everybody who wasn't a member, the Reality Club. And the same could be said of the club's motto: to arrive at the edge of the world's knowledge, seek out the most complex and sophisticated minds, put them in a room together, and have them ask each other the questions they are asking themselves. Every year, for many years now, Brockman has posted a big question to the group. He then curates and edits the responses into a book. Questions like, what is your most dangerous idea? What are you optimistic about? What have you changed your mind about? I was intrigued enough to buy this one. And also, I kind of felt it was the kind thing to do because at a certain point, the clerk from Middlebury College was standing there alone with no one to talk to. so I went up and bought the book from her. There are over 200 mini essays in This Idea is Brilliant. Some, like the British researcher's piece that was titled simply Sex, made the point that, well, come on, you don't expect me to use a cheap trick like that to catch your attention. I mean, you can buy the book if you want to find out what she said about sex and why that's important for us to know more about from a scientific point of view. And I'm not going to be cruel enough to walk you through the essays on subjects like spontaneous symmetry breaking or phenotypic plasticity. But one common thread, no matter what brilliant idea they proposed needed more attention, was the plea for more people to understand better how successful science really works. The last but not least essay in this book was by an evolutionary dynamics scholar at Harvard University, whom I'd never heard of. His name was Barnaby Marsh. He said in an essay titled Humility that we should all know that good science is grounded in the belief that, quote, right now someone somewhere is beginning to question something we all take for granted, and the result will radically change our future. So I want to pick up where Barnaby Marsh left off. The presumption of this book seems to be that anything that's not scientifically knowable, say, for example, what it means to feel beloved on the earth after a life of addiction and pain, doesn't need to be more widely appreciated. For Brockman and his, quote, reality club, knowledge that merits the name science is knowledge that can be reliably reproduced or confirmed by independent investigators. By implication, nothing else is real. There's no room for something experienced as grace. Now, I take a backseat to no one here in the value I place on science. That's one of the reasons I bought the book. Many of our challenges to building more love do stem from important scientific ideas not being widely enough known and understood. But scientific knowledge is not the same as that ancient spiritual aspect of knowledge called wisdom. Wisdom is grounded in knowledge shaped by personal experiences of what it feels like to be in this world, what it feels like to be rejected, to be overlooked, to be overwhelmed with confusion, to be imprisoned, to be helpless, to be left behind. And yes, what it feels like to be beloved in this world. Like science, wisdom has its own struggles with when and how to be humble. Unitarian Universalist wisdom leans towards listening with respect to personal choices, especially those of people who are living at the margins of our society in one way or another. And we must listen for more than whether their expressions conform to scientifically testable truths. It's not enough to listen and say what they're saying doesn't make sense because they're talking about the world in a way that it doesn't operate scientifically. We must listen for authentic expressions of feelings because loving other people, and indeed loving any other being, a dog, an animal in the wild, begins with honoring the fact that we have not walked that proverbial mile in their shoes. When it comes to love, conflicting perspectives are a hard but necessary feature of a meaningful life. They are not a bug in the system. That's what Jesus meant when he said to seek to love your enemies. That's what the old-time Universalists understood when they took a perfect God to be a God who wanted everyone in heaven and would make sure it happened. And that's what Boris Novak is teaching in his poem, Decisions 2. Much of his guidance, because it is grounded in love, rejects what logic seems to present as our choices. Between the earth and the sky, he advises, choose neither, but rather the bird. In other words, a living thing that stands in relationship to both. Between two children, find some wise way not to choose between two children, but to choose both. Between the lesser and the bigger evil, find a way to choose something positive even though you know that others may be interpreting what you're doing as choosing one of the evils. You will have some decisions to make at the annual meeting. You will be making them among people who care about CVUUS. You will be among people who have, in becoming members, promised to care about each other, to care about what we offer the wider community, and to care about what we will leave for those UUs who come after us. There is a lot to love in the opportunity to do that. As we worship in the spirit of love, so may we also convene to work in that spirit. Blessed be. Amen.